In Genesis 50, Joseph outlines an encouraging truth when he says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." And so God is able to make good come out of and in spite of any evil done by man or the devil.
This is Mission 66, an adventure through God's Word. This program is brought to you by TWR in partnership with the Bible Teaching Ministry of Dr. Luis Seau. We're currently in the book of Genesis. You can follow along with your downloadable study guide at mission66.org. Now let's dive in with our teacher, John Matthews, and co-host, Esther Sisulu.
Thank you for joining us for our Bible study program where we explore its pages chapter by chapter. You know, the Bible is still the best-selling book in the world, and I think we owe it to ourselves to at least open it and read this foundational work. Well, today, as we continue in the book of Genesis, we've now come to chapter 19, and here we see Abraham's nephew Lot, who had chosen to live in the southern Jordan Valley, which was at the time a lush and green land that was wonderful for raising livestock. Now, the only problem was that the area he lived in was corrupt, and he didn't seem to mind it so much as long as he prospered financially. And I think, like many of us today, we've become tolerant of evil as long as life goes well for us. Well, today our teacher, John Matthews, will present the theme, Raining Fire.
Esther, thank you so much, and so good to be with you for this latest episode of Mission 66. A warm welcome to you wherever you join us from today. And as Esther just said there, if you were with us last time, you may remember that after Lot moved into Sodom, and Esther said that it was this green Jordan Valley, very pleasant surroundings. He ended up being kidnapped during this tribal war, and then he had to be rescued by his uncle Abraham. Now, here in chapter 19 of Genesis, he needs rescuing again, but this time for different reasons. Let's read. The two angels came to Sodom in the evening. Now, these are two of the three angels who visited Abraham in chapter 18. And Lot was sitting in the gate of Sodom. And this means that he is a public official. He'd not only become prosperous, he'd also been accepted by Sodom's populace and had been appointed or elected to be among those who get to sit in the gate. And when Lot saw the angels, he rose to meet them. And he bowed himself with his face to the earth, and he said, "My lords, please turn aside to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet. Then you may rise up early and go on your way." They said, "No, we will spend the night in the town square." But Lot pressed them strongly, so they turned aside to him and they entered his house. And he made them a feast, and he baked unleavened bread, and they ate. But before they lay down, the men of the city, the men of Sodom, both young and old, all the people, to the last man, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us, that we may know them." And the use of the words "know them" in this context doesn't mean they just wanted to be friendly. It means the same as when it says in the Bible, "And Adam knew his wife, and she had a son." So they were saying these things with sexual intent and surrounding the house. And Lot went out to the men at the entrance, shut the door after him, and said, "I beg you, my brothers, do not act so wickedly. Behold, I have two daughters who have not known any man. Let me bring them out to you and do to them as you please. Only do nothing to these men, for they have come under the shelter of my roof." But they said, "Stand back." They also said this fellow came to sojourn and he has become the judge. Now we will deal worse with you than with them. Then they pressed hard against the man Lot and drew near to break the door down. But the men reached out their hands and they brought Lot into the house with them and shut the door. And they struck with blindness the men who were at the entrance of the house, both small and great, so that they wore themselves out, groping for the door. So these guys, they are pushy, surrounding the house, beating on the door. They're not going to take no for an answer. And when Lot protests and says, look, don't do this wicked thing, they then turn on him, accusing him of judging them. And so they proceed to threaten Lot with bodily harm. They didn't realize at all who they were dealing with. They didn't realize these two men inside were God's angels, the same two men who had negotiated with Abraham in the previous chapter. And they also had the power to strike these men of the city blind. And they did that. But not even blindness stopped them. So they continue to grope blindly and they wear themselves out to try and find this way of satisfying the insatiable pull of their own flesh. Verse 12 says, then the angel said to Lot, have you anyone else here? Sons-in-laws, sons, daughters, or anyone you have in the city? Bring them out of the place, for we are about to destroy this place because the outcry against its people has become great before the Lord, and the Lord has sent us to destroy it. So Lot went out, and he said to his sons-in-law, who were to marry his daughters, up, get out of this place, for the Lord is about to destroy the city. But he seemed to his sons-in-laws to be jesting. Now here Lot may have been righteous according to Abraham, but here he is prepared to offer his own two daughters to the mob surrounding the house and beating his door down. And he evidently had talked so infrequently about God that when the time came for him to be really serious about it, his family thought that he was joking. And now, when the angels try to get him to escape with his life, he actually argues with them and resists their help. Take a listen to this. As morning dawned, the angels urged Lot, saying, up, take your wife and your two daughters who are here, lest you be swept away in the punishment of the city. But he lingered. So the men seized him and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, the Lord being merciful to him, and they brought him out and set him outside the city. And as they brought them out, one said, escape for your life. Do not look back or stop anywhere in the valley. Escape to the hills, lest you be swept away. And Lot said to them, oh no, my lords, behold, your servant has found favor in your sight, and you have shown me great kindness in saving my life. But I cannot escape to the hills, lest the disaster overtake me, and I die. Behold, this city is near enough to flee to, and it is a little one. Let me escape there. Is it not a little one? And my life will be saved. He said to Lot, behold, I grant you this favor also, that I will not overthrow the city of which you have spoken. Escape there quickly, for I can do nothing till you arrive there. Therefore the name of this city was called Zoar. And so here you have Lot almost having to be dragged out of this doomed city. Verse 23, the sun had risen on the earth when Lot came to Zoar. Then the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah sulfur and fire from the Lord out of heaven. And he overthrew those cities and all the valley and all the inhabitants of the cities and what grew on the ground. But Lot's wife behind him looked back and she became a pillar of salt. And Abraham went early in the morning to the place where he had stood before the Lord, and he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, and toward all the land of the valley. And he looked, and behold, the smoke of the land went up like the smoke of a furnace. So it was that when God destroyed the cities of the valley, God remembered Abraham and sent Lot out of the midst of the overthrow when he overthrew the cities in which Lot had lived. And so what used to be this lush, green valley full of acres and acres of pasture land was suddenly, overnight, turned into a smoking, rock-salty wilderness near the Dead Sea. And the story does not stop there either, because Lot is now left alone with no wife, and his two daughters are miserable. Verse 30 says, "Now Lot went up out of Zoar and lived in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to live in Zoar. So he lived in a cave with his two daughters. And the firstborn said to the younger, 'Our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve offspring from our father.' So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. He did not know when she lay down or when she arose. The next day, the firstborn said to the younger, 'Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring from our father.' So they made their father drink wine that night also. And the younger arose and lay with him. And he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus, both the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites to this day." And here you have Lot and his family, who had been in Sodom for so long that they were tainted by the evil of society. Even though they didn't do the worst of the sin, enough of it had rubbed off. And so here we have drunkenness and incest, to the point of Lot having children born of his own daughters, which we have to say went on to create havoc for the whole future of Israel, because the Moabites and the Ammonites were continual thorns in the side of Israel throughout the long history of Abraham's descendants. And God allowed it all to happen, which he often does, to allow people to understand and suffer the consequences of their actions. But also perhaps it was to demonstrate that he is always able to get the jump on Satan, no matter how he may try to overthrow God's purposes. We remember that Ruth, the great-grandmother of King David and direct ancestor of Jesus through the line of Mary, well, she was from Moab. And in Genesis 50, Joseph outlines this encouraging truth when he says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good, to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives." And so the wonderful truth, and boy do we need to hear this today, as we are prone to error ourselves, is that God is able to make good come out of, and indeed, in spite of, any evil done by man or the devil.
You're listening to Mission 66, and this is our Bible study with John Matthews. And I have to say, John, that was a pretty heavy chapter, and I just want to thank you for your take on Genesis 19. Now, for those people who may be joining us for the first time and haven't heard any of our previous lessons, what can we say about these two angels? I mean, did Lot identify these two as being angels?
Lester, in a previous episode, we read how three men approached Abraham when he was under the oak of Mamre. And Abraham recognized immediately that these were no ordinary human beings. One of them is actually called the angel of the Lord, and that always refers to the Lord Jesus Christ when mentioned prior to his birth as a baby in Bethlehem. And the other two men, well, we figure must have been angels. And angels appear to mankind throughout the Bible, but not with wings and halos. They always appear as regular people. In the book of Hebrews, angels are called spirits who are serving and helping those who'll inherit salvation. As for Lot, well, I imagine that he may have realized that they were angels at some point, we're not told, but they demonstrated, didn't they, their supernatural powers by blinding the attackers, and they knew what was about to happen before it happened, and it was they who then made fire rain down on Sodom.
Yeah, well, John, I know that in our future episodes, we'll talk more about the angels. So I think for now, I'm going to ask a different question, looking at verse 8, because here we see Lot offering his daughters to these sinful men, you know, as they try to beat down his door. Honestly, I'm trying to understand what sort of mentality this is. Perhaps you can give me some insight.
Well, it's difficult to, other than it reflects, does it reflect Lot's character? Yeah, maybe. It certainly reflects his state of mind in the moment. And you're quite right. It is unthinkable to us that a father would offer his daughters in this situation. Shocking, actually, to read, isn't it? But then we are all people with sin in our hearts. And so there ultimately is potential for a lot of shocking things to come out of our lives without God. And so, you know, we shouldn't judge in that respect. But, you know, this is clearly a moment of desperation. And Lot was terrified. And so he offers to do the unthinkable. But, you know, there's a mob scene here. There's a situation where life is being threatened. And in that situation, it's hard to trust our own judgment. In these moments, you know, we could ask, why didn't Lot just do what we think we would do and jump out and fight the men in an honourable attempt to try and protect his family and his guests? Well, listen, that sounds fine from the comfort of our recording studios, doesn't it, Esther? Or where we sat in our sofas at home. But who knows what we may or may not do if we were ever put in the same situation? So look. It seems a shocking read, but actually it's important, I think, not to judge. And there's also, I think, another possibility that we could take into account here, in which some of these attackers may have, I don't know, been customers or previous friends of Lot and his family in the past. And even though Lot, you know, had tolerated their moral standards for a while, now they're really starting to show their teeth, or at least now that he's the subject of their immorality. And all of a sudden, he just is sorry for living for so long in Sodom and getting accustomed to this sin. And maybe he didn't realize how far down that road that he actually was.
You make very important points there. And, you know, just think about our society today. We witness things on the news. You know, we may come across some videos that depict gruesome murders, or perhaps even watch TV shows that glorify sin. And I suppose in the same way, we too we've become accustomed to it.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, very true. You know, I think there's a sense where we subtly and not so subtly get exposed to wrongdoing and evil. And we can watch these kind of things on the media dramatized and sometimes even glorified. And we then reach a point, perhaps without knowing it, when all of a sudden, well, that's all pretty normal to us. And yet what we allow into our minds and ears ultimately takes root. And so there is a responsibility for all of us to really take care and be discerning in terms of what we allow ourselves to watch and listen to.
Well, you know, let me ask about this rain of fire that fell on Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, a rain of fire filled with burning sulfur. I mean, is there any scientific explanation for what happened there?
Yeah, I've heard some people try to explain from something like this from a point of science. Sometimes I think, why on earth would you want to explain this from a point of science? From the God who created the universe, who knows so much more about this than our tiniest minds can ever know. And so it's very clear what this is in verse 24. It says, the Lord rained on Sodom and Gomorrah sulfur and fire. Where did it come from? It came from the Lord. Where did it come from? Out of heaven. God did it. And the fire and the brimstone came from heaven. And, it's a pretty shocking scene because it burns up the people as well as whatever grew on the ground. And they believe, don't they, that the region where Sodom and Gomorrah used to be is now where the Dead Sea is today. And I don't know whether you listening have been there. I've been there a few years ago and, it's a barren, barren picture. And it's a place that has a really extremely high concentration of salt and sulfur. In fact, the Dead Sea itself is so salty that it's impossible to sink. And you wouldn't want to take a mouthful of it because it would make you pretty ill. Your body there would float so easily that you cannot stay submerged. And it's impossible for anything to live in there either. So there is no living life in the Dead Sea. And so maybe that's a surprising as well from a human scientific perspective, but maybe not from God's perspective. Because if you go to some countries, for example, that were bombed during World War II or areas of land, well, that plant life is now thriving today. Not so in this area around the Dead Sea where Sodom used to be. Well, maybe the fact that that is barren to this very day remains as a stern and sobering warning of divine judgment.
Well, keeping in the vein of divine judgment, I mean, we see Lot's wife who looked back and suddenly became a pillar of salt. What was going on there, John?
And again, without the context, your initial thought might be, that's a bit harsh, just a cursory glance over the shoulder and you're turned into a pillar of salt. But again, what we have to have faith in and what we do have faith in is that God knows the state of our hearts. He sees right through us. He sees our hearts and our minds. And evidently Lot's wife clearly had second thoughts about leaving Sodom and was thinking about potentially all her possessions, her standard of living, her jewelry, everything that she owned. And so back she looked and she becomes a pillar of salt.
Well, wow, that is fascinating, incredibly fascinating at that. And it now leads me into this last question, John, looking at verse 14, because it says that his daughter's fiancés didn't take Lot seriously. They didn't take him seriously when he was warning them about the coming destruction. I wonder why they didn't think he was being serious.
Well, let's put ourselves in their shoes for a moment. You live in this beautiful place that is picturesque. You're wealthy, you're well off. You know, you have everything that life can afford you. And yes, you know, this place is corrupt and it's known and there's immorality around you. But as we said before, maybe they've just learned to oversee those things because actually their standard of living is such that they don't mind it, to be honest. And in comes Lot, and maybe they're thinking, you kidding? You really, really? Look how lovely this place is. This has got to be a bit of a joke. Well, there's resonance with their laughter in the story of Noah, who was also laughed at building the ark, but the rains came anyway. Sometimes today people, well, they don't take God seriously. They don't believe he exists. The Apostle Paul wrote that this would be very common in the last days. So we read the Bible and there's nothing surprising about that. And that there would be plenty who would mock and scoff and say, even if they believed in some elements of the narrative of faith, they might say, well, we've been hearing about this second coming of Jesus for 2,000 years. Where is he? And that often happens with young people in universities and schools when biblical topics are brought up and faced with so-called human wisdom. Perhaps when you mention God, people scoff and consider it a fairy tale. And perhaps that is one of the devil's ace cards in blinding people.
Well, I can without any doubt say that there's a lot of takeaways in today's episode. So how should we summarize Genesis 19, John?
Yeah, let's do that. And it's an episode today that has shown how God sent angels to rescue Lot from Sodom before it was totally annihilated by the rain of fire. And the men of the city so depraved that they surrounded Lot's house. They tried to rape the two heavenly angels. You know, Lot himself barely escapes the flames. In fact, he pretty much has to be dragged out of his house by the angels. And when the fire comes and falls, it is total destruction. Total destruction of what was in the moment an entire green valley. Within a few hours, it was as far from that as could be imagined. Jude wrote that the destruction of Sodom serves as an example for anybody who allows the often subtle downward spiral of sexual immorality to seep into their hearts, minds, and souls unchecked. The Bible reveals to us that God is love. He is love. He doesn't just demonstrate love. He is love. Calvary shows that. But he's also just and he's righteous. And God cannot stand his perfect law being mocked and rejected. And so this God of love is also a God of justice, and he cannot tolerate those things. And in heaven, the righteous cannot coexist with sin. And so heaven, thank the Lord, is real. But so is hell.
Well, dear friends, we invite you to join us next time here on Mission 66 as we move on to chapter 20 in our study through the book of Genesis. It's always a pleasure joining you, and until next time, God bless you.
Has God used today's program in your life? Then you'll want to receive the free study guide that's waiting for you on our website. You can get it right away by downloading it at mission66.org. At mission66.org, you can also leave a comment or make a donation to help this listener-supported ministry. When you give, you're helping listeners experience solid Bible teaching in many languages in some of the most spiritually resistant places in the world. Thank you for helping at mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio.